There is a word occurring six times in verses 25 and 26. It is the word bless or blessings. And in this chapter, as we have heard, Jacob, like a prophet, pronounces a benediction upon each one of his 12 sons. But Joseph's blessing is particularly interesting to us because we are looking at his life these Sunday mornings. Remember that a couple of weeks ago we looked at verse 22 and saw how that Jacob describes his son as a fruitful bough, branches running over the wall. Then last week we looked at how Joseph coped with the attacks of those who shot at him like archers, but his bow abode in strength and he was able to reply in a godly and gracious way. Now in verses 25 and 26, it's as if Jacob, coming to the conclusion of his blessing upon Joseph, gathers force in his words and comes to a climax, and the word blessing occurs over and over again. And it seems that everything God can give a man is to be lavishly loaded upon Joseph and his descendants, Ephraim and Manasseh, who will make two tribes in Israel. And it's got to be an encouraging subject for us this morning, the blessing of God, and how that it stands out so sharply and clearly here in these two verses. Now, in their first application to Joseph, of course, they must be understood literally, these words, because we've got blessing in terms of temporal or earthly things. And if we picture here Joseph as being the father of two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, who will one day inherit the land of Canaan, the terms of this blessing are most wonderful. They consist of everything people living in the land of Canaan could want. The blessings of heaven above, verse 25. In other words, the annual rains that fall from the heavens, so vital to harvests and all the food, the land flowing with milk and honey. The climate, the sunshine, the breezes, the annual rains, giving all the production of the earth to feed a people and make them truly blessed. The blessings of the deep that lieth under, meaning underground rivers and streams that you can dig down to with well shafts so that you can have wells and abundant water supply, vital water for drinking and for irrigation. And then blessings of the breasts and of the womb, children born safely and nourished, plenty of children, rising generation and a generation after that, the future, Ephraim, Manasseh, and the descendants in time to come. And it could mean also blessings of the breasts of the womb. It could mean young born sheep and cattle and plenty of livestock that will enrich the lives of Joseph's descendants. And then verse 26, Jacob says that he has under God more blessing to give than his forebears Abraham and Isaac. Joseph, he says, the blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors, my forebears. my father Isaac, my grandfather Abraham, even those two great patriarchs did not have blessings like this to give to their sons. Abraham gave a blessing to Isaac. Isaac, my father, gave a blessing to me. But I have blessings to give to 12 sons. And I have blessings to give to you, Joseph, whose descendants will divide into two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. And I have blessings to convey from God that will bless a whole nation, the nation of Israel, one day living in the land of Canaan. And then he says that the blessings will be extensive and enduring. Verse 26, unto the utmost bound, extensive, to the very borders of Canaan, of the everlasting hills, as enduring and as lasting as the hills and the mountains of Canaan. These are mighty words, poetic words, showing how that Jacob, as God's prophet, calls down blessing from above upon Joseph beyond the other sons that he had. Well, now these, as I have said, are temporal blessings, earthly blessings, and they were fulfilled handsomely for Joseph's descendants. You've only got to read on in the Old Testament and see how the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh inherited the land of Canaan, had their allotted portion, how they prospered and were blessed in these very terms. But it reminds us, even at this point, that temporal earthly blessings are to be traced up to one source, God above. Jacob is acting as a conveyor of these blessings in promise to Joseph, but they're not Jacob's to give. He's the mere instrument, the channel. God is the source. And dear friends, we must never forget that God is the source of every earthly good thing, every material benefit, every practical and human thing that we have. Paul, in preaching to his hearers in Acts 14 and verse 17, puts it like this. He's preaching to people who wanted to worship him and Barnabas as gods who've come down in the form of men. He's preaching to heathen men. But he begins by reminding them of the true and living God in heaven. Acts 14 verse 17, he says, "Nevertheless, God, he left not himself without witness." And what are those things that witness to the reality of the true and living God? "In that he did good and gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness." See, that's the teaching, that God in heaven is the one who's given us this world, this climate, this weather, food, and everything to make life comfortable and pleasant. And he's the one from whom all blessings flow. Looked at even on the lowest level, the temporal and the earthly, God is to be worshipped and thanked, acknowledged and praised. Because, dear friends, if he were to withhold any one of these things for any time, we should soon be reminded of our dependence, and that we live by his permission and by his generosity. And so we're powerfully reminded here that what we have as human beings living upon this world, this earth, are blessings. Blessings. Not things that have come by accident, not things that are just here for us to take and use, but things that are to be traced up to their source, God. And he is to have the glory of them all. But we must consider these things not so much in a temporal way, but as having a spiritual application as well. And I suggest that this is picture language to illustrate what are the greatest of God's blessings, those to our souls, spiritual things. And we're going to see that Joseph had them, and all who are anything like Joseph have them and rejoice in them as well, and they are called blessings, illustrated by this poetic language. And we can follow the picture and follow the metaphors and see how that this is true, and see if it is true for you, and see if we can have a share in these things. They're illustrated for us from nature, particularly the phrase in verse 25, blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under. Let us see what this means. Trace it out. Our blessings, spiritually, can be illustrated by the sun. That's one of the blessings of the heavens above, isn't it? The sun that shines in the heavens. The sun is at the center of our solar system, as we know. And it is the nearest star to the earth. And without the light and heat of that huge star, there could be no life on earth at all. And God pictures himself like this. Psalm 84, verse 11. For the Lord God is a sun. And just as that mighty star shines in the heavens and pours down all its benefits upon the earth, so God's people esteem God as their sun. Their sun, who is the source of light and warmth and everything cheering and everything reviving. In a spiritual sense, this is true. We worship God who is depicted by the sun, and we thank him and praise him for that. You look at the difference on an earthly level between plants that have been growing in the shade and plants that have been growing in the sunshine, in a sunny spot, assuming they're both plants that need sunshine, a sunny spot. The plants in the shady place, they're stunted, they're small, they're held back. The plants in the sunny spot have grown, have thrived, are strong, and open their petals to the sunlight. And dear friends, we know if you have the life of God in your soul, and if you have a personal, intimate relationship with God, you know that what makes all the difference in your life is when you know and feel the presence of God with you. And when God, your sun, as it were, shines upon you. Now, this very language is used in Scripture, Numbers 6. At the end of that chapter, the blessing pronounced upon Israel by the priests is this: the Lord make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee, give thee peace. You see, it's the picture of the sunshine. It's God like a sun beaming down upon you, and in your soul, in your experience, as you are in his presence, you can sense the warmth, you can feel the light, you can know the comfort, and you can walk by that means. You're not in the darkness, you're not in the cold night, you're in the daytime, the sunshine, and the Lord is beaming down upon you, and in his light you see light. This is scripture language. In fact, so great is this that David in Psalm 63 and verse 3 says this. He says, thy loving kindness is better than life. He says, in effect, the Lord's loving kindness streaming down to me like the sunshine that I feel in my soul, it's better than life itself. Life is sweet, but God's love is sweeter. And I do believe that if I had the choice to make between life and the felt love of God and the sunshine of his loving kindness, if I had to choose between the two, I'd rather lose life than lose this. It's a blessed thing. It's like heaven upon earth. Imagine what the world would be like without the sun. And Christians know what life would be like without the shining of their God upon them. Did you realize what you were singing earlier and in this hymn, where Top Lady says, whilst I feel thy love to me, every object teems with joy. May I ever walk with thee, for 'tis bliss without alloy. See, he's saying, while I feel God's nearness and his reality to me, while I live in the sunshine, every object teems with joy. The whole of life is lit up and is cheerful and glowing. Just like on a sunny day, you step out of doors, you say, oh, it's good to be alive. The blue sky, the sunshine, the warmth, and everything, all of nature is cheerful and light. Everyone is happy. And that's how it is for the believer. And that's why what Christians covet more than anything else, even more than earthly blessings, dear friends, what Christians covet most of all is, oh, to live near to God, and oh, to feel the sunshine, the divine sunshine in my soul, and to be close to him. The blessings, one of the blessings of heaven above, is to know this. Do you seek to live so that you might know God shining upon you like this? You don't have to tell me, you don't need me to tell you that God does not shine upon someone deliberately sinning. God does not shine upon deliberate backsliding from him. And God does not shine upon professing Christians who walk ever so close to the world. He shines upon those whom he can smile upon with pleasure, because he sees that they're trying to walk in all his ways and are longing most of all to be close to him always. He shines upon those who are sincere and who seek the Lord and who by his strength want to walk uprightly, pleasing to him. The sun, that's one of the blessings of heaven above. It is indeed one of the greatest blessings God could ever give us, to so enjoy his presence and walk in the light as he is in the light, and to be like under the mighty sun of heaven's smile. What a blessed thing. What a blessed thing indeed. Do we know anything of it? It's our ultimate comfort in trial and sorrow. It's our ultimate incentive to resist temptation and to please God, mortifying sin, denying self. It's our ultimate incentive to live holy lives, to serve God, to give ourselves utterly up to him. The blessing of heaven above. God is a sun. He gives grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. Well, it's illustrated by the sun. As you came to church this morning, was your great desire expressed in a prayer something like this? O Lord, as I gather with thy people today, And as I seek to worship thee and hear the word, shine upon me. Pour out thy grace upon me. Give me thy Holy Spirit. Give me spiritual blessing. Oh, to know thee and to dwell in thy presence. Will you want to do that throughout the Sabbath day? So that God will be precious, a felt reality. Well, there's no greater thing. One of these blessings of heaven above the sun. Another is this. It can be illustrated by the rain, because rain comes from heaven above, and rain is used in the scriptures to depict, again, blessings from God, spiritual blessings particularly. And one great feature of it is this, that with rain in nature, there is a kind of a preparation that goes on beforehand, isn't there? Before rain comes to us. Rain comes when water vapor in the atmosphere condenses into water droplets, and billions of these water droplets cluster together to form clouds. And when these rain clouds have got to a certain size and weight, they collapse and they pour all their contents upon the earth as drops of rain. And God's blessings are like this. In Psalm 68 verse 10 we read, "Thou hast prepared of thy goodness for the poor." God's blessings are prepared blessings. In other words, God sees our need, and God determines what he will give us to meet our need, and God works on our behalf to prepare that particular thing, and then he gives it as a special gift from him as part of his covenant love and favor to us. "Thou hast prepared of thy goodness for the poor." It's not just given out thoughtlessly, scattered far and wide upon his people. The Lord takes pleasure in each one of us, and he prepares of his goodness for us who are poor. We're weak, we're needy, and God gives us what we specially need thoughtfully. Beforehand, he's taken time and trouble to work it all out, gather everything together, and then bless us like the gathering rain clouds above, and the time when the rain clouds pour out their blessings upon us. The blessings of heaven above. The rain. It was like that with Joseph, wasn't it? How was it that Joseph could be helped through all his battles and all his buffetings and all his trials and afflictions? God prepared what he needed at every stage of things. As Joseph sought to live in the sunshine and please God, so God prepared of his goodness and was with Joseph in Potiphar's house and in prison, prime minister over Egypt, every part. God did it. God's blessings are likened in Ezekiel to showers. "There shall be showers of blessing. Every drop, every single one, blessing." Sometimes we need to take stock when we feel tempted to be ungrateful or to murmur at all the blessings God has given. Have you ever tried to count the drops of rain during a shower? It's impossible. Can you count all your blessings during just one day? It's impossible. But they are showers of blessing upon us, prepared for us. The bulk of them probably unrecognized, overlooked. But that's what they're doing, coming down upon us as the blessings of heaven above, the rain. As surely as we live in the sunshine of God's smile, so we are daily loaded with benefits, and God's blessings come down upon us in that form. And incidentally, doesn't it remind us to be very careful in our comments about the weather? For we betray, don't we, our attitude and outlook when we, as we have had recently, almost ever since Christmas until recently, week after week, wet days, haven't we? Pouring down with rain. And the tendency is to say, what a miserable day. Horrible weather. And do we realize we're talking about God's blessings when we say that? And if God were to rebuke us and withhold the rain and allow us to go through a period of drought for a few months, we would certainly then be brought to our knees. And although the weather does look gloomy and dark and cheerless during times of rain, it's God's rain. But it's used in the Bible to illustrate God's blessings, higher blessings, spiritual blessings. The sunshine, yes, obviously. The rain, yes, just as clearly. Let's be careful how we speak about the things that God sends. Let's look at a third thing here. The sun, the rain, what else would we have in terms of the blessings of the heavens above? Well, the wind, the breezes. And again, that is a picture of God's favor and goodness. The wind is a most remarkable thing. As the sun heats air in certain places, the air expands and rises, and cooler air rushes to take its place, and it results in movement and air circulation. When it becomes violent, it's strong wind. When it's gentle, it's breeze. This is how God has made it, and it is a blessing. The air currents that flow around the earth and that flow over us. I remember before I was a Christian, I had it so wrong over this. I used to resent the wind. I thought to myself, I can understand the sun and I can understand the rain, but the wind, it's such a nuisance. It would be better off without it. But then, of course, we come to realize God's wisdom in it. How that the wind spreads seeds so that other things grow. How it purifies the air. How it can generate power. How it can benefit us in so many ways. Hosts of benefits. But did you know that the wind is used to illustrate God's blessings? Look at Song of Solomon 4, verse 16. To see that. You have it depicted here. Song of Solomon 4. And verse 16. The church or the individual Christian is praying, and he or she says, "Awake, O north wind, and come thou south, blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits." Now this is a prayer of the believer who is likened to a garden of spices, aromatic spices which give off beautiful fragrance. And what the believer is asking is for the north wind and for the south wind to blow. What is he saying? Saying this: Lord, I acknowledge that sometimes the north wind of affliction must blow over me, cold, painful. But sometimes in thy wisdom, the south wind can blow over me, warming, cheering. But both winds, winds from both directions, make the spices flow out. If you've been in a park on a beautiful day when all the flowers are open to the sunshine, and a breeze has gone over the flower beds and reached you, and the breeze has gone over all those flowers and made them release their fragrance, and it's hit you, the combination of those scents are beautiful. You see, the wind blowing over releases the beautiful fragrance. And you see, the Lord in his dealing sometimes makes the north wind of affliction to blow over his people, so that from them will come prayer to God, submission to him, trust in his promises, making God his refuge. These fragrant graces come out. Or sometimes the south wind, the warmth and the pleasantness, and we are more evidently blessed in our lives, and we rejoice and we're thankful and we're happy, and that too releases fragrance, thankfulness, cheer, joy, acknowledgement of God, tracing all good things to his hand. Whichever, it's for him. Did you realize, dear friends, that your religion is not for you, and your religion is not ultimately for others? Your religion is for God. Because let my beloved come into his garden, and the spices flow out for him in his garden, his pleasant fruits. We are called to be Christians. We are made what we are by his grace to give him pleasure. And it is a remarkable thing when you see a deeply tried believer, and oh, the cutting cold north wind has swept over that believer's life, but that believer stands firm and says like Job, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And that's a fragrance indeed. You may have visited believers housebound with disease and pain, cheerful acknowledgement of God and prayerfulness, submission to the Lord, gratitude for every blessing. That's fragrance. That's a benediction to go and visit such a believer. Some believers deeply tried in their personal lives, in their bodies, in their families, in their work situation maybe, deeply tried, the cold north wind cutting and blasting. Oh, but there's a patience and a meekness. The Lord is doing what's right. God never makes a mistake. I'm trusting in him. He's working it all out. That's fragrance. That's for God. That's for Christ. It's his garden that's letting out the sweet smell, the scent that so pleases him. Blessing of heaven above. Some believers, you see, who perhaps been very active in spreading the gospel, and now they're laid low and they bemoan and say, well, I can't do anything for the Lord anymore. I can't serve him now like I used to do. And the word that ought to be given to such a believer is this: look, you are God's garden, and God has sent the north wind over your life, but the grace that's coming from you is glory enough to God. You don't have to spread the gospel to live to God's glory. You can glorify him in sufferings. Glorify him in enduring pain and affliction like a Christian. Our religion is not primarily for us, it's for him. Thank God for the south wind. We have much more of the south wind, dear friends. And if we can't glorify God in the south wind, then shame on us. We're blessed with the warmth, the breezes, and every good thing. Sometimes the cutting north wind comes. And you say, well, what's the purpose of it? What's the end of it all? What's the use of it? It can make your Christianity that much more conspicuous because you acknowledge God and look to Him, trust in Him, and tell others that your religion is something that holds you up and gives you something they haven't got. It's one of the blessings of heaven above, the wind. But let me conclude with one more thing. It's this. The blessings of the deep that lieth under. Subterranean rivers and streams, underground water courses which you tap down to in sinking wells, and you have an ever failing supply of water. What's this? Well, dear friends, the point is this, that such a blessing is out of sight. It's underground. You can't see it. And that reminds us that sometimes God's blessing takes the form of mystery and things hard to fathom. The blessings of the deep that lieth under. Why does God do such and such? Why does God bring a believer through such circumstances? Why has God done this to me? Why has this been permitted to happen? The blessings of the deep that lieth under. You can't see. You don't know. But it's there. Hidden. Out of sight. God is still the source. But you can't expect to comprehend what God is doing, because there are such depths to His knowledge and understanding, His will and purpose, that you'll never know ultimately in this life. There was a missionary once who was working in a foreign land, and one month she didn't receive her paycheck, her monthly salary. She was seriously ill, and because she had no money to buy proper food, she had to live on oatmeal and canned milk. She didn't receive her salary check until 30 days later. And it could well be that the devil came alongside and said, if God loved you, He would have rewarded you better for this than this. You've gone to a foreign land and left behind everything to serve Him, and you've suffered all kinds of losses and privations, gone through so much for Him, and now He's not even made you have your wages on time, and He's allowed you to have to live on this stuff for 30 days. Is that a blessing? Where's the blessing in serving God when He treats His people like that? Well, on furlough afterwards, when she came home for a break and a rest, she mentioned to a doctor the nature of her illness. She described the intestinal digestive trouble that she'd been having, and the doctor said this: if your check had arrived on time and you had been eating your usual diet, you would now be dead, because the best treatment for your illness was a 30-day oatmeal diet. God knows what He's doing, you see. The blessings of the deep that lieth under. You don't know why at the time, but God does. Deep in unfathomable minds of never failing skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. Dear friends, they're still blessings, the blessings of the deep that lieth under. God would never ever work anything that was not a blessing for his people. Even though the whys and wherefores are out of sight, the mystery of his will. Joseph is a prime example, isn't he? All the reasons why God took Joseph through those different experiences, the blessings of the deep that lieth under. God in his depth and profundity knew what he was doing. And so he does, dear friends, with us, always, so that we might admire and bless God for such blessings. And they're better seen afterwards, as sometimes they will be. At the turn of the century, in a Wiltshire town, there was a road going through the town. In front of a chapel where godly people worshipped, dear member of that chapel and her husband had a number of children, and one of them was a little girl of, I think, 4 years old at the time. And hardly any cars ever went along that road in 1902 or 3. It was a great novelty when any car passed, and not very fast either. And children used to play chicken to see who could wait the longest before running across the road and getting past the car, running to the other side of the road. And there were a number of little children, and this little 4-year-old was among them. And they all dashed across, one by one got across safely past the car to the other side of the road. The little 4-year-old didn't make it and was crushed under the wheels of the car and killed. And the news was brought to this godly mother, and her words were these: "The Lord never makes a mistake." And she could bow her head in submission. And that's a woman whose godliness was solid enough to believe that there are blessings of the deep that lieth under. With God there are mysteries, but never any mistakes. And they are blessings, not cursings. Nothing but good. So, dear friends, the sun, the rain, the wind, and the things underground and out of sight. Do you live in a world where you can look at these elements and these things in nature and say, "These remind me of my God. My God has made these things, and my God uses these things to illustrate things in the spiritual realm"? And do they enable you to admire and bless God? Well, they did for Joseph, and may they do for us, for his name's sake.